Hello, and welcome to Prophetic Voices, Preaching and Teaching Beloved Community, a podcast from the Episcopal Church's Office of Reconciliation, Justice, and Creation Care, where we explore the season and the lectionary through the lens of social justice. I'm your host, Reverend Shaniqua, Staff Officer for Racial Reconciliation, and I'm so glad you could join us. In this episode of Prophetic Voices, we'll be discussing Easter Sunday, exploring the Gospels of Mark and John. Our amazing guests this week are the incomparable Jennifer Irving, who is an enrolled member of the Oglala Sioux Tribe and is currently the Director of Grants at the Red Cloud Indian School in Pine Ridge, South Dakota. She is a mother who practices her Lakota spirituality and believes in preserving the Lakota language and culture. We also have the extraordinary R.G. Manolis, who works in the community development field at my alma mater, the University of Minnesota Morris. She is also a foster parent, adoptive parent, and a spiritual director. And last but not least, the Reverend Dr. Gavin Shoemate, pronouns he, him, his, is a bivocational priest serving at St. John's Episcopal Church in Toledo, Oregon, and is a physician at Integrity Women's Health and Wellness LLC in Newport, Oregon. Welcome, my resurrection friends. What's important to keep in mind this Easter? And Gavin, or how about Jennifer, how about you start?
Oh, wow. Jump right into me. Okay. I think it's just this past year has just been a big time of reflection, right? And I definitely think, like, in the wake of some of these, like, huge historical events, you know, the killing of George Floyd, the insurrection at the Capitol on January 6th, like, I think it's just, for me, like, this whole time frame has been about reflection and how we're either adding to this divisiveness, this, you know, what our roles are in that, what our roles are in creating spaces for healing and safety for people. So I think for me, that's really what it's been. And I felt like a lot of us are being called to that during this time. And so, and then of course, layering on the pandemic, right? Like, we're forced to sit still in some ways and forced to really think about our lives, our families' lives, but also, like, how are we creating narrative and how are we contributing to certain narratives and how are we creating a certain environment? So for me, I just tend to think, like, we've just been in this place of, like, kind of forced reflection at times. And so I think this Easter season and all during Lent has been this idea of, like, okay, how do we get to a place of healing that's genuine and real? But also too, like, what's our role in that as individuals, as within our families, within our communities, but what's really our role in those things? I think, you know, we keep talking, I keep hearing this talk about divisiveness and, you know, these polar ideas, like, always in conflict, but it's like, what's our role in that though too? So that's what it's been about for me.
Thank you. Shook?
For me, this has, I definitely agree with a time of reflection, but for me, it's also been a time of remembering that Jesus rose. And so I'm reminded of the poem, "And Still I Rise," that we as a people do rise, can rise, will continue to rise. The thing that keeps coming back to me month after month after month, day after day, is the song from The Color Purple, "God is trying to tell you something." And I feel like God has put us all in a big old timeout. And when you go into a timeout, you're supposed to think about what you did and what you're going to do better. And so that has been something that has really preoccupied my time. What is God saying? What does God want us to hear, to see, to feel, to remember? What does God want us to do better going forward? And just this has been a time of me realizing, and I think a lot of people realizing, how we don't have this under control, that God has this under control, or some other being besides us has this under control. And look what I did, folks. I brought this whole thing to a screeching halt overnight, basically. And if you don't get a message out of that, I don't know what you need. But I just really liken it to a big old timeout. Mm. Like, what did I do wrong? What can I do better going forward? And remembering that Jesus rose, and so can we.
Hmm. Thank you. Gavin?
I think, well, I completely agree with Jen and with Shug. I identify with both of those reflections. I think that so many of us are coming from that place of lament, that place of just sitting there. I imagine, like maybe even a child in time out, just sitting there with their arms folded and just a scowl on their face and thinking, oh gosh, how did I get here? I don't want to think about how I got here. Things were fine before. And then gradually coming to a place of, oh, well, maybe I did do something. Maybe it's not okay the way things were, but how do we get out of that place? And I think that as a society, we're sitting in different points of that place or different areas of that place. And we're all sitting almost in time out in different corners thinking, how do we even begin to fix this? And really, as I read the passages for Easter Sunday, I thought, there was lament even after the resurrection. Because Mary was still so upset. She couldn't even conceive of anything else that could possibly explain why the body wasn't in the tomb. And there was still lament there until Jesus called her name.
Yes.
She didn't know who he was until he said, Mary. And to me, that says that we don't have the power on our own to drag ourselves out of this lament, out of this mess that we've made of society as we sit in time out. You don't get to come out of time out until a parent says, okay, you can stand up. What did you do? And what are you going to do different? So it's almost like waiting for the holy parent to say, okay, calling your name and saying, get up out of time out. What did you learn? And then we can recognize, oh, we've been given that resurrection moment. So for me, I think that's important to keep in mind that, you know, tying almost all those things together, that yes, we're in time out, but we can't get out of it on our own.
And don't you pay more attention? Didn't you pay more attention when your parents called you by name very specifically? And it kind of...
all of the names.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. You knew you were in trouble when the middle name makes an appearance.
Oh, yes. So this usually Easter Sunday, there's a lot of different like liturgical elements that some churches do. I've seen folks like put a like chicken wire cross and everybody puts flowers on it. I've seen people like resurrect the Alleluias, like where they like some people like have kids like dig them up out of the ground, or sometimes they'll do different things to hide them and bring them back, or what liturgical suggestions do you have for the Easter Sunday service this year?
Well, I am in a situation where I'm coming into very different traditions than what I've been accustomed to for 25, 26 years, local customs. And it has really given me pause to think about, you know, the myriad ways that there are to celebrate, to recognize, to reflect, to really stop. One of the things that was done at my previous parish was a flowering of the cross, and the chicken wire, and the kids would be the ones mostly to do that. And it was a very visual representation of basically new life. what was very bare, that chicken wire is now full of life, full of color, full of the love of the children's hands putting these flowers on the cross. I have really been deep in thought about what this Easter will mean. Here at St. Peter's, it will be one of the first Sundays that people are actually back in church. And here at St. Peter's. And so that will be a time, I think, of great rejoicing because of the sheer humanity, the being together with one another. But also, I think a lot of people are going to feel like they're at one with God again in a way that maybe they haven't been for a while, haven't been able to receive communion, full communion, haven't been able to hug one another at the peace, haven't been able to hear the music that we're accustomed to, and things of that nature. So I think that we're going to come into being again, slowly perhaps. There's still some things we're not going to be able to do, but I think there's going to be great joy. And I think that's appropriate, but I also think we shouldn't lose account of what the day actually means and just how different that might have been from our time of Easter last year. I remember holding up a sign on Facebook last year, and Shaniqua, I don't know if you remember seeing it or not, but I remember how troubled people were about Easter and not being able to gather. And I wrote out a sign and held it up, and it said, "Easter will come." It's still coming. Just because we're not together doesn't mean it's not coming. And so, you know, obviously we're going to be a few steps away from that for some of us, but Easter will come. No matter what we do or don't do, Easter will come.
Yeah, for us, we're not back in our church building yet here at St. John's. So it's taken a lot of creativity to try to take some of our liturgical traditions and dig down into what they really mean and figure out how do we reproduce that in a way that's meaningful when we can't gather together. For Ash Wednesday, instead of, you know, I know some clergy took little envelopes and they mailed out ashes to the congregants and, you know, their parishioners, and that's the way that they celebrated Ash Wednesday, is that they had their own ashes. Some stood out at the church and double masked and gloved and everything and did ashes almost in a to-go basis. We did something a little different this year in honoring our humanity, that we will go back to ash. We wrote out our Lenten commitments on a little piece of gift tissue paper, and we burned those at home as part of a service. And those are sitting now for me on the in the kitchen, where I can see them every morning, and I can see what my Lenten commitments are and how they've been burned and gone to God in that way. But trying to figure out, how do we flower a cross when we're not together? How do we sing the Alleluias when we're not together? How do we resurrect an Alleluia when we're not together? That's the challenge for me now, and I don't honestly have an answer yet.
I wonder about amaryllises. Like, I think that those things just flower so fast. If you planted one, it would just kind of be like, whoa, boom.
One of my,
only if it makes that noise.
Yeah, one of my liturgical focuses during Lent has been not so much what I can give up, but what I can give during this time. And in addition to what I can give up. So not just so much concentrate on you know, the old thing that we do every year, what am I going to give up for Lent? Well, one year I gave up giving up things. You know, my focus is more this year is what can I give? And realizing that in giving up something, letting go of something, you are making room for other things to grow or to come into being. And so that's kind of how my focus has shifted during this time.
St. John's hit upon an interesting kind of a Lenten mantra. The good news is love is free. And because of that, we are free to love. So I wonder how that could play into our Easter Sunday.
That's lovely.
This might be more of a question for folks. In what ways do you remember those that can't join this year because they passed on? Or I know there are times like in our Lakota spirituality that we, you know, make space and time to like wipe the tears of those that are in grief and mourning. And when we enter into some of our ceremonies, like there's a certain time for that. And maybe, I don't know if that's appropriate during Easter, but it just feels like so many people are in that grief journey, right? And they're in that in that period of adjusting to life without their loved one. Like how is there space for that during Easter? I just think of, you know, when you lose somebody, that whole first year is hard. You're doing all the firsts without them, right? It's like their first Easter without somebody, their first Christmas without somebody, their first this without somebody. So is there space for that during Easter service? I don't know if it's appropriate. So I just thought about how do we transition people through those things?
Yeah, I really appreciate that question. And it's something that I'm struggling with now. I lost my sister last month to COVID. My mother's brother died just last night of COVID. And I lost a cousin about 2 weeks before my sister died. And I really realized that I don't know what to do with that right now. And I don't know if I'm supposed to feel particular things during Lent. I don't know if I'm supposed to feel particular things as we approach Holy Week and Easter. And so I have to tell you, I'm really struggling with that. And the other element of that is when your family looks to you for priestly things or deacony things, you know, I'm the only Episcopalian in my family, so they look to me for certain things, and I had to say to them, I need to be your sister right now, because that was my sister too, and I'm grieving too, and I can't be the clergy person. I just can't. But I do recognize that was probably as far as I went with it, that I haven't really been able to grieve, and I haven't really been able to be a comfort to myself, you know. So I really appreciate that question, because it really gives me impetus to really delve more deeply into that.
I think of Good Friday as the time when people start, like, that's the time when we kind of remember Jesus' death and we can remember everybody else's death.
Everybody else.
And then Easter is the day, you know, when we think about everybody rising again, or the promise that we will all see each other again. And I'm always reminded in Lakota, there's no word for goodbye, because we know we'll see each other again, right? Oh, and okay. So I think in that way you can remember folks. And I usually preach about this at funerals, but like, we believe that, you know, when you go up to that communion rail for the Eucharist, all of your relatives are there. Like when I kneel and I'm ready to take communion, my grandma and grandpa are there. My aunties and uncles that have gone on are there with me taking communion along with whoever else. And so I always think of that too, as I think about Easter and the resurrection.
And I think Good Friday, I think that's a good point, Shaniqua, and that's a very appropriate place to for that sentiment. And I think that because of that, Good Friday can take on much more meaning this year than it has in the past. I'm just thinking of my congregation, Good Friday, you don't usually get very many people. You know, it's the Friday before Easter to a lot of people. But I think that if it's, I don't want to say couched in, but if it becomes a larger portion of the mourning and the grief and a vehicle for that, that's what I like about liturgy, is that it's a powerful way to address so many human emotions in a very, it gives space for those things. Shug, like you're talking about, I don't know how I'm supposed to feel. I don't know how I'm supposed to do Lent when I've got this thing that I'm carrying and I don't know how to carry. I think that the liturgy gives space for that, and it gives allowance for that, and it gives a place. And I think as clergy, part of our job is to hold that space. And Shug, you'll have to have someone else hold that space for you. Yes, because yes. You can't hold that space for yourself.
Thank you. Yes.
So let's talk about the Gospels and the resurrection story. And so there's two choices. You have Mark and you have John, and they're a little different. So let's just talk about them as a whole, and then maybe we can talk about them individually. What stands out for you in the resurrection story, either or both of them?
I'll go. You know, I mean, even as a non-Christian Lakota, I've heard this story through different ways. I, you know, was thankful for the readings because I could kind of read those different things. But I think what struck me was always like the humanness element, you know, of folks not quite understanding or believing, you know, this new thing, right? Or, and I don't know if it was new, but just in both, there was this, like, not quite understanding what's happening. You know, once Jesus was gone, like, and, you know, the folks to come after were, you know, it seemed like there was like confusion and this disbelief, right? And I think of like that humanness in all of us. And like, sometimes when the Creator presents us with things, how we don't, aren't, you know, like sometimes it's beyond what we can comprehend, right? And I think that's so beautiful in a way, because like, as a human, we're always on this learning journey, right? To the day that we pass away, and we're always like learning things that the Creator's putting in front of us. And sometimes we don't see it right away. It's not immediate. And I think that was what was striking to me, was like, here's this beautiful thing. It's new. It's still, even after hearing this story, I mean, you all probably have heard this lots more than I have, but there's still this, like, well, I mean, like, there's still this humanness to it, right? Like, we still have to comprehend it for ourselves too, right? That there's this resurrection, that this happens, that this, you know, there's this ascension, and this is the way, you know, the Creator is operating. So we still have to explain it to ourselves too. So I don't know. I just always think like, in those miracles that happen every day that we have to wrap our minds around, or sometimes we just have to let go too, right? Like, we don't need the explanation. This is just what happens. So anyway, that's what was striking for me in both stories was that humanness and that kind of innocence that we have as humans to really understand what the Creator is trying to do or show us.
Yeah, I share that. I do hold the opinion that we're not supposed to understand everything. I really like to think that the Creator is holding something back for later, you know, for when we're in a different plane. I was particularly struck by the fact that Mary did not recognize Jesus. It gave me pause to think about those times that we now don't recognize Jesus. Don't recognize Jesus in works. Don't recognize Jesus in other people. Don't recognize Jesus in our responsibilities, the things that we're called to. I'm very aware that the same creator, the same Jesus, the same God that makes promises also makes demands. And so, you know, where are those times that we just don't recognize? And I think sometimes we get so focused on the divinity of Jesus that we don't really see the humanity of Jesus. And I just wonder in that moment of not recognizing, of Mary not recognizing, what was it that she didn't recognize? Was it his humanity or was it his divinity? And I go back and forth on that. And again, it gives me pause for myself and for other people that I deal with, is one of those times that we just don't recognize. We're in the presence. We see it, but we just don't recognize it for what it is.
Gosh, I went off into left field with my thoughts. I had two things that stood out for me this year. The first thing was that there's power in a name. There's so much power in naming something or someone. And that brought me to the trans experience and dead naming. When you call somebody by a name that is no longer one that they recognize or own, there's power in a name. There's power of recognition and there's power of denial. By dead naming somebody, you deny who they are. By calling somebody by their chosen name, you're affirming them. You're saying, I see you. That was the first thing that came to me. And the second one was that the tomb is empty. Mm-hmm. The tomb is empty in the sense that Jesus was resurrected and he takes everybody with him. Nobody gets to stay in the tomb. So I wonder, or this makes me wonder, who's choosing to stay in the tomb? Who would we rather see stay in the tomb? I'll just leave it there.
I love the piece about the names. I think, I was thinking I have several names. I have like my nickname, Shaniqua, and my, you know, Lakota name. And I think as Lakota people or Indian people, naming is such an important part of your like upbringing. There's a whole ceremony when you get your name, and sometimes people will get a different name if something traumatic happens to them or if they change their life in some way. And I've heard, like when I was in Wisconsin, the Ojibwe's, they would say, you know, when you pray, you have to use that name for the creator to hear you, like your Indian name.
I was struck by that as well when you said there is power in the name. Yes. And you know, yeah, and that is such a journey for us as Lakota people. You know, we're given our birth name and then we're given a Lakota name later. And like Isaiah said, it doesn't have to be traumatic either. It can just be like an accomplishment, like you've done so much for your people. Sometimes you're given a new name based on that as well. Or you're given a name that you're like, that's your guidance. Like, that's what you're supposed to live up to, right? So when you said that, Gavin, I was struck by that. And I thought that's, and it kind of made me think about that when Mary didn't recognize him. I thought about something that you said, Shug, about that. Was it the divinity or the humanity that she didn't see? And I also believe like there's our spirit self, right? That leaves the flesh behind. Yes. And, you know, we're, you know, is that the best part of ourself? Is that our real self, you know, without the things that we wear and put on and, yes, you know, the things that change in our body. And, you know, is that what she was seeing, was the true self,
right?
That true spirit. And that's why it was hard for her to recognize. And I think the closer we embed ourselves in prayer and in spirituality, like it's easy for us to see those things about each other, right? And so when our relatives come to see us, either in dreams or things like that, like we're able to see them in a different light and recognize them because we're recognizing their spirit, not necessarily their human body form. So a lot of that came up when y'all were talking. So, yeah.
I always preach about it. When I preach about it, I talk about, well, sometimes I make a joke about having some serious bedhead if you've been, you know, dead for 3 days. But I often talk about it like in nature, we have a couple of examples where it's the same thing, but it looks different. Like a dandelion. If you didn't watch the dandelion go from yellow to the little puffball that you blow on to blow away, you wouldn't know that it was the same plant. Or like ermine, which is like that weasel that's like white with the little black tail, is different in the winter, and it's a, you know, a weasel in the summertime. So we can see examples of that in nature where there's things we don't recognize. Has there ever been a time where you encountered something sacred and didn't realize it until later?
I had an experience. My wife, Doris, and myself, we had a very dear girlfriend who was suffering from ovarian cancer, and she had asked us to promise that when her time came that we would be the ones to help her transition. And so we received a phone call, and you know, she was in the hospital, and she said, I would like for you to come to the house and be with me. And they had said it would be about a week, and so we packed a little bag and we went to her house. And we were with her, and it was very painful for her to get out of bed or walk anyplace. But she wanted to walk to the bathroom. And so we would assist her. Sometimes it would take 45 minutes to get her there and back, but that was okay. And one day we were just about out the door, and she said, "Shug, I want to wash my hands." So I said, "Becky, you did wash your hands. You want to wash them again?" She said, "Yeah." And when we got back to the sink, she told me to put my hands in the sink. And what she wanted to do was to pour water into my hands. And that was so powerful at the time. But since then, I have just really been able to understand what she was doing. And it was a moment that I was transformed by that. And I often think about that. And since that time, have really come to understand how important water is to my spiritual sense. I'm an Aquarian, and so maybe that's kind of comes natural. But I am really at peace when I'm around water. Really at peace. And but I always am reminded of that incident and that gift. And Doris and I did have hands on Becky when she transitioned. That was exactly what she wanted, and we were able to do that for her and be with her. So I often think about that that moment, and I'm really grateful for it. And I will say, I don't think I really recognized how important it was at the time, you know, at the time that it happened. I thought it was just something Becky wanted to do. But since then, I've come to realize.
Shortly after I was ordained to the priesthood, there was a new priest who had come to be the vicar of the church that raised me. And because I live in such a rural area, I was an associate at that church for my first year or so of ministry. And one of the things that I enjoy doing living on the coast is going to the beach. Oregon beaches are not like, they're not warm, they're cold. And the water is cold. This is not Southern California. This is not the tropics. But one of the things I like to do is walk on the beach and look for agates. That is one of the things that we're famous for, is the agates on our beach. And I was walking in there, are these just these beds of rock, little tiny rocks, and you can find little fossils and things on the beach and lots of jasper and randomness. And I was on the phone with my the vicar, who was, you know, one of my mentoring priests at that point. And I said something to her just sort of at random because I was looking at the rocks. I said, you know, a rock can't polish itself. And she kind of stopped. And I kind of stopped. And it was one of those moments where it was like a, you know, the spirit-led moments where you say something, but it's coming more through you than from you. And I didn't really realize how true it was until I came to my own congregation here at St. John's. I've been with them for about 2.5 years now. And I don't know how many times I've said that to them, is that we're going to bang into each other. We're going to knock chips off of each other. We're going to have big collisions and little collisions and, you know, little fender benders. But that's how you get to become beautiful. And that's how the inner beauty shows forth, is that a rock can't polish itself. It has to bang up against other rocks. It has to be tumbled in the ocean and come back on the shore and come back out again before it comes up and you say, wow, that is a beautiful rock. But you probably wouldn't have said that when it first knocked off of whatever it fell off of.
I love that visual of us banging into each other and bumping into each other and perhaps being reshaped and reformed. I love that.
Absolutely. Yes, yes. And sometimes it's painful.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Where do you see resurrection in your community or in your world? And, or maybe where do you wish you saw resurrection in your community or in your world?
I can, I think like in my community right now, we're seeing a lot of, I mean, it's just worded differently, but a lot of revitalization around our Lakota language. And I see this movement across Indian country around revitalizing language and culture and heritage in a lot of different ways. Even in my lifetime, you know, I remember going to ceremonies as like a little kid and there were other little kids there. You know, there might be one or two, but, you know, there wasn't a lot. And nowadays when I take my daughter to ceremony, there's other kids there. There's a lot of kids and they're in ceremony and they're in prayer and they're learning. You know, I always think like their learning has been like fast tracked. I mean, not in a negative way, but like, so one of the songs that we sing is a four direction song. And I didn't learn that till I was in my 20s, you know, even though I had been in ceremony since I was a little kid, I didn't really learn all the aspects to it and what it really meant and translated and that kind of thing. But yet I see like kids that are just a few years older than my daughter singing the four direction song, knows what it means, can, you know, tell about the history and the teaching of it. Like, and I couldn't do that till I was in my 20s. So I see that happening in community and it's beautiful. So I mean, it's worded a little bit differently, but I see that resurrection happen in that way. And yeah. And also like, this understanding and this movement towards healing and truth and healing and reconciliation between American Indians and the church, whichever church. I don't want to just say the Catholic Church because I work at a Catholic school and we have a truth and healing initiative right now. But I'm starting to see that across the country in different in different indigenous communities where folks are talking about how do we, you know, we're not going anywhere, right? Like the church isn't going anywhere. We're not going anywhere. So how do we get along? But then also how do we reconcile some past hurts and harms and some of the things that happen, you know, as these two, you know, forces collided, like how do we reconcile and tell the truth about that and heal from that and then move forward in a beautiful, genuine way. Right. So I see that too. So I'll just say like, those are the ways I see resurrection in community and also healing. So, yeah.
Thank you.
I think one of the ways that has been most profound for me and our community here has been the willingness of people to let go of some things in terms of some ideas that they've held for a long, long, long time. Towards healing, there've been a lot of courageous, and I do use that word intentionally, courageous conversations between people, between communities. The understanding that there cannot be forgiveness without reconciliation, that forgiveness is not a standalone, it's not a one and done thing. There must be reconciliation. And if there's reconciliation, there's new life.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's new life for everyone involved. And so that really has been a big, big, big piece, I think, of what I consider resurrection of sorts, the willingness to listen to, and you know what, the willingness to really see other people through these conversations and through these meetings. You know, one of the curses of Zoom has been that we're able to see each other, we're able to hear each other, but are we really engaged with one another? And so I've kind of seen that evolve. And I've been really, really happy about that. I think the resilience and the signs of new life and just recognizing that there's much that we can do without and probably should do without in order to have new life and to have new growth, and is just, if there's a gift of COVID, I think that might be one gift. I don't know that we would be doing these things if had it not been for COVID. I don't know if we would have been willing to sit in front of a screen like we do for the length of time that we do had it not been for COVID. So I don't want to give COVID too much credit, but but you know, there are some things that we have been told through the universe and the creator that we need to do, and that we need to be about the business of being about different business, not business as usual. So. And, you know, I'm going to add to that. I think during this time of COVID and also some of the other pandemics that we've been suffering from for a long time, whether it be racism, homophobia, whatever, sexism, xenophobia, I think that many of us have been able to see ourselves on the cross in one way or another. And I think that's been very enlightening. I've seen scales falling from a lot of eyes, including my own. And it really has put me in communion with Jesus. During my formation, one of my mentors told me, Suge, are you sure that you want to be ordained? Said, because if you don't look good on wood, don't go into the priesthood. And I said, what is he saying? I thought about that, you know, but I really kind of came to understand. Well, I'm still working with that, but I came to understand, you know, there are times when we're all on that cross, have been and will be, sometimes because of other people's foolishness, because they don't like what color they are. They don't like the fact that we're gay. They don't like the fact that we're a woman. They don't like the fact that we don't have blue eyes, whatever, you know, people will put you on that cross. And so when I'm up on that cross, or I feel I'm up on that cross, I got to figure out what I have in common with Jesus, and besides being there, and what it means to be resurrected. So, you know, it's never a one and done. Mm. I don't think we can ever sit here and say we have it figured out, that we know what it means entirely, because I don't think we do. But it is a continuing spectrum. It's just, as long as we live and draw breath, we're going to be doing it. And even after, given the promises that have been made to us by Jesus. So, and I often say, when I leave here, if I get to sit across God on the porch in a rocking chair or something, I got a lot of questions I'm going to be asking. So, Aniqua, you've spoken with me before, you know, you got some splaining to do. I just want to hear what in the world was going on. But, you know, signs of resurrection are all around us if we just open our eyes, I think, if we just recognize what is out there and what can be out there through us.
Where are you in the resurrection story? Shug, you sort of talked a little bit about that, of being on the cross at different times, but where do you identify with that resurrection story?
Well, for me, I definitely can identify with being on that cross, either with Jesus or giving Jesus a break. there's a lot of stuff in my personal background that is less than pleasant, that you would have to put in, I mean, I'm just going to call it what it is, in the area of abuse. And I know where I was then, and I know where I am now. And there's nothing else you can call it but resurrection. I don't think that I could have the life that I have now without having gone through that time on the cross. I don't think I would have had the perspective. I don't think I would have had the insight. I don't think I would have had the level of compassion, the ability to forgive, and the great capacity that I have to love without having been through that experience. So that pretty much says it in the nutshell for me. I'm a big proponent of what our presiding bishop says about, if it ain't about love, I mean, I really believe in love, 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 love. If it ain't about love, it ain't about Jesus. And so that's kind of where my frame of reference is. But I really don't think I would have been able to have the kind of formation and be where I am today had it not been for what I call my time on the cross.
I think that's true of a lot of us as people, but as clergy particularly. Sometimes I wish that I could stop being formed for just 5 minutes. Just to get a break. Like, okay, exactly. Enough of the formative moments. Can I just be a blob in a moment?
Yeah. I had a moment not too long before my ordination where I was, and I don't know if everybody goes through this, but I was like panic stricken. I was like, oh my God, you know, is this right? Am I really worthy of this? And I literally got down on my knees and I said, God, why? And especially why now? I mean, as you can tell, I'm not exactly a teenager. And I said, why? And I kid you not, I heard a voice. And the voice said to me, just be glad I'm not making you have a baby at 90. And I was like, okay, no more questions. I haven't asked another question since then. But, you know, it's tremendous joy, but it's a tremendous weight, too. You know, it's I understand. I'm newly ordained, and I already feel like what you just expressed. Like, you know, when do you get a break? Well, I guess you don't. I mean, I don't know. If people that have been at this a lot longer than I have say, you know, they're still waiting for their break. So, but my favorite movie is The Godfather, and there's a line in there that I always remember, and that line is, this is the life that we have chosen. And so I think the life chose us, but it's, you know, you get what you bargain for, I guess. And so I'm not exactly happy to hear you old timers say that you never get a break, but okay. There you go. Something to look forward to.
You know, I think that this year in particular, being the only person of color in my congregation and one of exactly three now, because we have a new bishop, three clergy, Asian clergy, or of Asian descent in the diocese. Sometimes I feel like Mary, coming to the men in power, if you will, saying, this is what I saw, and trying to get them to come and see what I saw and see things the way that I've seen them, instead of sitting back and saying, well, yeah, you know, Mary, it's really early in the morning. Are you sure that's what you saw? Maybe you saw something else. Why don't you sit something down and have a cup of tea? Relax, and it'll be okay. And Mary's like, no, you have to come and look. It's not there. You have to come and see. And, you know, what would have happened if Peter and the beloved disciple didn't go running for the tomb? How would that have changed the resurrection story? If they had said, it's just Mary. You know, she's just a woman. It's all right.
All right.
So sometimes I feel like I'm running around with my hair on fire, literally, and saying, would you please come and look? And sometimes it's my congregation that I'm saying this to. Sometimes, you know, as a physician, it's my patients that I'm saying this to. Sometimes it's just the people on the street that I'm saying this to. I'm saying, hey, look. And they're like, you know, it's just Gavin. His hair's on fire. It's okay.
He'll be all right.
It happens all the time. Give him 5 minutes, he'll calm down.
Jen, where do you see yourself in the resurrection story?
I mentioned this before. I think like the, I definitely see myself in the Mark. I appreciate Gavin's, you know, his perspectives on Mary too, because like, yeah, I can totally see myself as that, you know, oftentimes being the only Indigenous person in a room. You become the expert all of a sudden on every Indigenous issue ever.
Right.
And, you know, so there's that. But I think I've really felt called to just the folks that, I think towards the end of Mark, when they said they went out and fled from the tomb, for terror and amazement had seized them, and they had nothing, and they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid, right? Like, I think of our, so many of our community members, and especially in Indian country, when, like, we, you know, in order to protect certain things, like, we've had to stay quiet about those things, right? Afraid because some, in the times that we have shared, like those things were appropriated in other ways that weren't always helpful. Ceremonies were shared, songs were shared, you know, that kind of stuff. So, But I also think of just the humanness of that moment too, of, you know, other times that I was afraid, you know, and fearful of things that I've experienced and seen. And is there that belief there? Maybe their fear was just trying to comprehend all that they have taken in. Maybe they didn't feel worthy at times to have experienced something so beautiful. So, you know, would people question that? Like, well, why were you shown and not somebody else, right? So I think that's probably like what spoke to me the most in that place, or in these stories, is just these, I think there was two that, that left and were like, this never said anything. Mm-hmm. And so I just think of like how fear sometimes moves us to action and how sometimes fear moves us to inaction, and just that delicate balance there and how human that is. And we all would like to think we wouldn't be that guy that would be afraid, but if we're put in that situation, would, you know, like, so it's like what calls us to move and what doesn't. And so that was probably, you know, I think where I seen myself too.
Well, you know, you just made me think of something. You made me think about the movie, The Black Panther. And how when you speak about keeping something secret in order to protect it, and that whole notion of protecting the vibranium in Wakanda, keeping it secret, keeping it protected, because realizing what might be done with it, and not necessarily in a good way, if other people that didn't really understand what it was about, what they might do with it. So yeah, that was powerful. Makes me think about the times that we as Black people have had to do that, or we as gay people have had to do that, how we've had to live our lives in secret a lot in order to protect ourselves, our jobs, our children. That is really, really, really fertile ground for a lot of conversation.
And that's where my brain went, Shug, is to the LGBTQ population. Mm-hmm. You know, how much do they live in quiet? I have several trans patients that they tell me now they're afraid to leave their homes because we live in a conservative town. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you're trans in a small town and you're out, you're pretty visible. And not everybody does well with that knowledge. Like you said, you know, they're going to do what they will with that kernel of truth about you. And sometimes it's for good, and quite often here it's not. So they're staying at home. They're ordering their groceries, driving to the grocery store, picking them up, and going home again. Yeah. And it's not because of COVID.
So in the small amount of time we have left, I'm going to ask the closing question, which is just, you know, what tips do you have for preaching Easter Sunday this year? And I'll share one that was told to me by my friend who's Methodist. And she said, keep it brief and keep it bright. Was the two things she said. But what tips do you have on preaching Easter Sunday this year?
I like those.
Yeah, I have to go along with that. That's one thing that I've been thinking about a lot, really keeping it brief. And thought about something that my sister that just died said all the time, no matter what calamity she was facing or we were facing in the family, whatever, she always said three words, just be happy. I think people want to be happy on Easter. I think I don't think that I think they want to be happy about the resurrection. I think they want to be happy about what that might mean in accessible terms for them in their everyday life. But what has been said is preach the gospel, and if necessary, use words. You know, tell a story. Tell a story.
Yes. Yeah, it's hard to add much to that. Keep it brief and keep it bright, because the light of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what else can you say?
Yeah.
And that we're all called and recognized by name to participate in the resurrection and not to stay in our laments and our woes.
That's right. That's right. That's exactly right.
And that we're not in them alone. We're not in them alone.
Jen, any tips you want to add? Things you want to hear?
No, I think you guys hit it all. I think, you know, before I asked the question about, you know, how do you remember, but not kind of having a better understanding, maybe it's like, how then do we celebrate our loved ones that have passed on?
Yes.
You know, what are the traditions that we're going to carry forward and that bring us happiness and bring us, you know, their life, and that energy that they carried around us with us. I think, that might be something to land, or one folks might want to hear, especially if, you know, they can remember on Good Friday, maybe Easter is then like, well, what are some of the things you're going to carry on that they did to remember them? You know, so I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think just acknowledging the times that we're in and yeah. And I think everyone's been through the ringer, right? Mm-hmm. So can we celebrate some?
Yes.
Can we have some good times? And can we, yes. you know, find some joy in all this? Like, let's do that. So whatever that is, let's do that.
And by extension, if we can do that, if we can celebrate our loved ones that have passed on, how do we then continue to celebrate Jesus?
Someone told me once when someone's passed on, you want to remember them, think of, or like to honor them, remember something that you really appreciated that they always did, and then try and do that thing. And I was thinking about like my grandparents, every time, you know, someone came to the house, they'd always be like, oh, do you want some coffee? Oh, you know, they'd always make sure they had something to drink and something to eat. And so then, you know, I always try to remember to do that when people come to my home.
Sure.
Or whatever, you know, whatever it is, the thing that people, you know, people do. So thank you so much, everyone, for being a part of this. I appreciate your being willing to share your prophetic voice with us today.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you want to learn more about Beloved Community, visit episcopalchurch.org/beloved-community. Thanks to our guests, Jennifer, Argie, and Gavin. Thanks also to our production team, especially Chris and Phoebe. If you heard a resurrection message today, please rate, review, and of course, share our podcast. Thank you for joining us for this Holy Week season of Prophetic Voices. Watch for new episodes coming later. Until next time, let your light shine.